Snark built in. We are a member of the 1012 Podcast Network. You can find other great Big 12 content over at 1012 Podcast Network. We're also a member of the Sports Social Network, England's largest sports podcast network. Get all your great Manchester United and I guess other footy content over at Sports Social. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review over at Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Share this with your friends wherever you found it, whether it was Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, anywhere you can find good podcast content, you can find Gerald and myself. Connect with us on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic. Email us at longhornpod@gmail.com. My name is Kyle Carpenter. I'm your host this week, like I am every week, and I'm joined by silence. I am joined by some guests. We'll have some folks on, but it is a solo pod. It is Kyle running the show. Everyone's greatest fears? No, we've read the thousands of readers, listeners who've DM'd us, who've called our non-existent phone line, who've reached out and said, "Enough, Gerald, get him off of my airwaves. I want a solo Kyle pod." No one has ever said that, but here we are, folks. Gerald is unable to join, and it's week zero, moving into week one. When you're listening to this, it is officially week one of college football. We are in single-digit days until college football, and so the show must go on. And here I am, joined by some great guests. We will have some Alabama good stuff coming in just a moment, as well as a Rice preview to follow that. We have friends from Roll Tide Roll, as well as The Roost, here to help me not be by myself and preview this thing out. So get ready. Here we go. We are now single-digit days. This is the easy math part of the season. We are single-digit days when this hits your ears. It's Tuesday, and we have a Rice game on Saturday. That's right. It is football season officially. Week zero has come and gone. We're in week one right now. But we're talking week two preview as we've gone reverse order. We have double previews coming out for you this week to get us to the finish line. We have the privilege, the honor, no offense to our Rice friends or our Wyoming fans, but the biggest non-conference opponent, probably the biggest game of the season for Texas. We're talking Alabama right now, and we have our friend Brent Taylor from Roll Bama Roll joining us tonight. Brent, how's it going?
Hey, Kyle, I am doing great. Are we even sure week zero counts? It existed. It was a thing. But now it's time for week one.
I don't get real jazzed up about like preseason NFL football. And that felt a lot like preseason NFL or college football, right? Like no offense to Notre Dame, who looked good, you know, as you would expect they would, or USC, who looked good on one side of the ball, as you would expect they would. But they were the only two teams really worth watching. And that's not meant to be rude. I mean, college football is college football, but it gets much better quickly. So some good week one matchups. And again, the matchup of week two is the one we're going to be talking about here. So I'm excited just to dive right into this thing. So you've been on the show before, Brent. You know how we're going to do this. We'll run through some football, save the fun stuff for the end. And starting off at the top, the nice thing when you bring Alabama on is there's consistency right at the top. Nick Saban heading into his 17th year, a few wins shy of 200 in his career at Alabama. But besides him, there's new faces all around from the team that came to Austin last year, both in the coaching room as well as some of the best players, Bryce Young, Will Anderson, Jahmyr Gibbs, to name a few, Brian Branch, Jordan Battle, et cetera. There's some really good players who've gone on to the next level. With all that said, I mean, what's the, before we dive into any specifics, what's just the kind of vibe around Tuscaloosa right now after a year where Alabama was left out of the playoffs and, you know, that certainly not being up to the standard or acceptable for the Crimson Tide fans?
So we'll just start with last year was, according to our fans, an absolute disaster and a train wreck of a season. As you know, they went 11-2 and won a nice bowl game and all of that. So in a lot of ways, there's a lot of consternation of, okay, Alabama just lost their quarterback. They just lost the best defensive player in program history. They're going to be really bad. We're losing so much talent and we were already bad last year, and the sky is falling. The other half of the contingent of fans say, okay, we just added by subtracting two coordinators that had not been doing well. We're doing a lot of replacing underachieving players with younger, higher rated recruits, and kind of a reset back to going forward. And there's those two contingents of fans that absolutely cannot agree on which one is better right now. And most everything kind of hinges on, we don't know who the quarterback is still. And until that gets decided, there's going to be a lot of uncertainty.
Well, let's start there, right? Because Bryce Young, every football fan is familiar with him, especially Texas fans. Maybe they'd heard of him or seen the highlights or seen the playoff games in the past. But when he came to Austin, I imagine if anyone else was the quarterback except Bryce Young, that game turns out differently. There was some Bryce magic, some scrambling, some late game heroics from him that are not uncommon, his trademark. But he is no longer gone. The number one overall pick in the draft this year is playing at the next level. And the national story, as you alluded to, it's not just Alabama fans. Everyone in the country is aware of the fact that there hasn't been a starter named to replace him. Middle Tennessee being game one, probably you're fine with any of your options. But Jalen Milroe is a guy that Texas fans are familiar with just because he was committed here, flipped once Ewers committed the first time. Then when Ewers went to Ohio State, everyone was very sad and longing for Milroe. He's the presumptive favorite just because he kind of filled in when Bryce was hurt. Last season had some good plays, some challenges, whatever. But with him, it sounds like Ty Simpson, the big recruit, and Notre Dame transfer, is it Tyler Buckner?
Tyler Buckner.
Coming down. What's your read on it? I know you don't have the crystal ball, but what's your read on who will be the quarterback or who you think should be the quarterback when Alabama comes to town in week two?
So there's been a little back and forth throughout the preseason and offseason. Nick Saban obviously gives us absolutely nothing other than grumbling that we even ask, like we're crazy for wanting to know. But everything I've heard, it still seems like Jalen Milroe is the veteran of the group. He's got the starting experience, and he's not done anything to lose that position, and neither of the others have done anything to take it from him. For a while there, Notre Dame transfer Tyler Buckner seemed to be kind of falling behind into a distant third place. The most recent Saturday scrimmage, a lot of reports started popping out like, hey, Buckner actually had a really good scrimmage this time. It's kind of his first big day. Ty Simpson's been doing less, not really. Something's not clicking for him. Simpson's kind of the guy that most of us want to be the guy. He's a five-star recruit in his second year in the program, coach's son kind of player. He's got good wheels, good athleticism, very, very quick release, just one of those kind of guys. But something doesn't seem to be clicking. Now, the wild card in all of this is true freshman Dylan Lonergan. So he was a kind of hybrid baseball player, football player, joined Alabama with a hurt foot, I believe, surgically repaired. I think it was foot. Didn't really expect him to even play in the off-season spring practice, and then he did. He showed up at an 8A game and looked great for a couple of drives. That was just enough to give all the Alabama fans a taste. You know how backup quarterbacks are. You see two good throws and they are the next best thing. Things just keep kind of popping up like, hey, now Lonergan's getting some reps with the twos. He's getting some reps with the ones. I think he's still solidly in fourth place here. But we keep likening this back to 2016. Alabama had four quarterbacks, really. None of them were really stepping up, and a true freshman, Jalen Hurts, who had been way, way down on the depth chart, all of a sudden was showing up in the first game, kind of got subbed in and then never looked back. So I would not count out Dylan Lonergan from this conversation whatsoever. But for right now, I think it's Jalen Milroe.
Like I said, Milroe, like Hurts, a kid from Channelview, Texas, familiar to Texas fans, and someone who just the athleticism certainly scares Texas fans. We've struggled historically, probably the last decade, as Texas's football dominance has waned substantially with being able to contain mobile quarterbacks. So Milroe scares me, especially there. But, you know, the thing that usually scares someone about an Alabama offense, at least of recent vintage, is a legendary wide receiver pipeline. And, you know, for the past few years up to last year, that was, you know, just write it in. Those guys were first round draft picks all over the place. There was a bit of a dip in production last year, but definitely talent there. The top two options, Jermaine Burton and Ja'Cory Brooks, both returning from last year's team. Obviously, I think the running back was the Jahmyr Gibbs was the first option, but top two receiving options there, and a couple of exciting youngsters and one JUCO transfer. So tell us kind of, and I believe a tight end transfer as well. So tell us the state of the pass catchers and where that talent level is kind of in the pantheon of Alabama teams heading into week zero, when we obviously don't know.
So I think wide receiver has been quietly a pain point for Alabama, especially last year. Going back to 2021, Alabama lost a national championship on a bunch of drops, and then brought most of those guys back. And I lost another game to drops and possibly a shot at another championship. And that's been huge. It's been a big deal. A lot gets kind of placed on, Bill O'Brien, the Bill O'Brien offense. And some of that, yeah, Bill O'Brien loved his little 7-yard curls, and there's not a lot of room for receivers to do anything useful after that. So there's hope. There's a new offensive coordinator in town. Maybe they figure out going horizontal is a thing you can do in college. Give the receiver a little room to run. That said, drops have still been a major, major issue all through spring. We saw it in the A-Day game, and it's, by all accounts, been an issue this fall as well. There's a whole bunch of receivers in kind of the freshman, sophomore range that have got a lot of speed, a lot of recruiting stars to their name. But for right now, are any of them going to step up and be a playmaker, or are they just there to kind of be there and drop the ball when we need it? That is, to me, a much, much, much bigger deal and question mark than the actual quarterback position for us. I think the quarterback will figure itself out. They'll figure it out. But if the receivers can't step up and start doing something more useful than they have for the last season and a half, it's going to be a long season. So you've got Ja'Cory Brooks is kind of the third-year guy at this point. He had an amazing game-winner catch versus Auburn a couple of years ago, and he's had some other great sideline catches. He's also had some very, very bad drops. They took Jermaine Burton as a transfer from Georgia. He was basically invisible for all of 2022 until the last couple of games. He seemed to figure something out. Other than that, he only made it on kind of in people's consciousness when he got in trouble for fighting people after a game. I'm still not sure we claim him. I haven't bought in yet. And then, after that, it's just a bunch of freshmen and sophomores. So we'll see how that goes. Tight end, there's a little bit of optimism. So Cam Latu went to the NFL. Latu was great. He was a converted defensive end with a lot of athleticism, played hard, stolen hands. And now Amari Nyblack is making waves. So he is a second-year guy. Kind of a hybrid receiver tight end coming out of high school. But the dude has crazy athleticism. He is fast. Word is he's kind of figuring out the whole blocking and being a tight end thing. Nick Saban's praised him multiple times. Hey, we could be in for a big awakening from that guy.
So it's a little bit scary, right? The Alabama, when they have a good tight end, seems unfair, but we've seen some of those pass catchers who didn't work out in Alabama make their way through Texas as well. Ajai Hall and tight end Jahlil Billingsley, who've now both since moved on from the program. But
Yeah, thank you for taking them.
it was worth an experiment, right? We do love we love Keelan Robinson. He's been just a it's I call him a blue collar guy, and it's rare that you have a blue collar guy who runs like a 4.340. He's just incredibly fast, but puts his heart out there. He's by far our best special teams player, but there's
I loved Keelan. I hated he left. He was one of those that was just kind of buried on depth charts. I
yep.
thought he could have been a kind of role player if he'd stayed one more year. So I hate we lost him.
And he's again, he's been behind then Bijan and Roschon Johnson, two of the first, what, five running backs taken in last year's draft. Maybe two of the first four. I don't remember where Roschon went, but you know, he's kind of been in that same place here at Texas, unfortunately, but it has not, he has not stopped working his tail off. And so talking of the running back room, right? I think it's, as you talk about the passing game kind of finding itself and knowing Tommy Rees, as you mentioned, came from Notre Dame, he likes to run the ball. Running back seems like it will be incredibly important to the Alabama offense, as it was for so many years before they kind of realized, okay, y'all want to do this, we can throw the ball better than anyone. For many years, the running back at Alabama was the most important position on the offensive side of the ball. There's a Texas kid, Jace McClellan, and fellow senior Roydell Williams seem like they've been there just an incredibly long time. And then a lot of excitement with some of the young guys in there as well. So what are we looking at with the running back room?
So I think kind of the opposite of what I was just complaining about with a bunch of receivers. Alabama's really got four quality running backs here. Jace McClellan is the senior, has played all years so far and done well. Jace has really done well. I think this is his chance to really, instead of being the really good number two, like, hey, now it's time, step up. Do it, be the number one. But he's just a good all-around back. He's got like this good gliding speed, tough guy, like tough runner, but also more of a glider, I guess. Good out of the backfield, good pass blocker. He's just kind of good at most everything you could ask. Then he's got Roydell Williams, came in same class as him. Roydell lacks some of that same straight line speed. He's built more like a short, stubby little bowling ball, and runs with choppy feet. So he's pretty good. Mostly been used as a short yardage, for kind of a fourth or third down and short kind of guy. Not a lot of upside with him, but he's a senior that can make the ball move when you need it. Behind those two is where it gets fun, though. So Jam Miller is a second year guy that kind of looks like he defies physics when he runs. Again, kind of like Roydell, he's built like a boulder. You see him and you're like, that dude is thick. And then he takes off and it's like, oh, he is fast too. Like he has just got a different level of 0 to 60 than any of these other guys do. He showed it a little in mop up duty last year, and by all accounts, seems to be pushing the two seniors for playing time this year. And then there's the freshman, Justice Haynes. This guy is something else to watch. Kind of like Jace. He is just an all around, get him the ball however you can. Nick Saban's come out multiple times and said, hey, this guy does not look like a freshman. Like this guy looks like a veteran already. Kind of the combination of maturity, work ethic, athleticism, just poise at the position. Any other year, it's like, man, should he be the starter game, like game one? So we haven't seen him yet. Well, that's still yet to be seen in live action, but by all accounts, Alabama's got four starting running backs this year, and I don't know how Tommy Rees is going to figure out how to use them all.
That's what we in the business call one of the good problems. Justice Haynes is an exciting kid. I think Texas's CJ Baxter and Justin Haynes were the two or Justice Haynes were the two best running backs in that class, and both freshmen. By the end of the year, I bet are you know seeing a good share of carries, and both could you know could be vying for draft positions in a couple years. the you know, running backs aside, which there's so much talent. And by the way, if listeners, Jam Miller is the name. The two guys ahead of him are great, but as you know, as Brent said, anytime he's another Tyler, Texas kid, he's from Tyler, but anytime, even his high school tape, like it's like, how did this kid get out of Texas? We'd love to have him, but he looks like the few clips I've seen in college, just he's going to be a problem. So exciting running back room, but the running back, you know, are only as good as the offensive line. And it does feel like, as a Texas fan, especially, that we really got lucky that Kyle Flood followed Sark here to Texas, because it seems like since Flood has left, Alabama has been not quite the same, not quite itself, not what you expect from Alabama in the offensive line room. You know, you have a surefire NFL player in J.C. Latham. You lost a couple guys in the portal, Javion Cohen. Caden Proctor looks like one of those crazy freshmen, like we had in Kelvin Banks last year at tackle. But, you know, what does this offensive line look like? What's the ceiling for it? What's the floor?
Yeah, so after Kyle Flood took off to Texas, Alabama, for some reason, brought Doug Marrone out of the Jacksonville Jaguars, the crazily successful Jaguars, and said, yeah, this guy, this head coach, he should be an offensive line coach. It was a disaster in 2021. It was one of the worst offensive lines in college football that year. That was kind of quiet because Bryce Young made up for a lot of that by doing his magic act. They were a disaster in 2021, just utterly bad offensive line play. Marrone moved on. Alabama hired Coach Eric Wolford out of Kentucky. And we saw a lot of improvement last year. So we saw them become a competent to above average, decent pass blocking team. Run blocking still a little behind. They struggled in short yardage a lot. But they bring back, coming into this year, we saw improvement last year. We're expecting more improvement in the second year under Coach Eric Wolford. And man, they are getting big. So you just mentioned freshman Caden Proctor looks to have already won the job at left tackle. The dude's 360, 6'7", 360. Just huge. And then you've already got future first round guy J.C. Latham, listed 6'6", 335. I recently saw he's up over 350 as well. Now, left guard Tyler Booker returns, was a great, great freshman last year. Now looks to be like, okay, did good as a freshman. Let's step up, be a team leader kind of guy this year. A lot of good things heard from him. He's almost 240 or 340.
That's better.
And then center and right guard are a couple of seniors. One of them, right guard Darian Dalcourt, has kind of been starter, benched, starter, benched, starter, benched the last few years. He's decent. Does a pretty decent job. Can get overpowered. So there is hope that sophomore TJ Ferguson will take his job. But if not, he's still a solid graduate senior. You'll be fine with that at guard. So there's a lot of optimism behind the offensive line. They're huge. There's a good combination of veterans, NFL talents, and just, again, size. And they seem to be, throughout this fall camp, the kind of the group that's taking over the forward-facing, loud identity part of the team. Like, we're the group that's stepping up. Whether they back up the talk remains to be seen, but they're being the outspoken group.
Yeah, and it seems interesting. We spent a long time talking about the offense when this is a team that probably is going to be defense-led, but maybe it makes the offense the most interesting because there's questions. Can quarterbacks step up? Can offensive line step up? Can receivers be playmakers? But on the defensive side of the ball, there's a lot of answers, only a few questions, some really elite players, but some new faces in there as well, including starting right at the top. Defensive coordinator. I remember all the Bill O'Brien talk. I have a good buddy, Parker. Shout out to Parker. Surely listen to this at work, who's an Alabama fan. And I feel like I heard him spend more time talking or lamenting Pete Golding than Bill O'Brien. So a new defensive coordinator, start us at the beginning. Anything different from a schematic? What are we expecting with the new defensive leadership?
So Pete Golding, I'll give you a little backstory on this one. He has been a lightning rod for Alabama fans for 4 years. He was brought in back in 2018, kind of as almost a consultant for Saban, as a small school guy that had run a 3-3-5 defense. But Saban was looking to kind of shift his defense around, get out of that 3-4 that the spread offenses were taking advantage of, and work to incorporate more of a three safety look. Well, Alabama's other defensive coordinator, first year Tosh Lapoy, was awful. Got relieved of play calling duties midway through the season, and Golding just kind of took over by default. And Golding's a young guy too. Like, he came from a small school, had very little experience. It was a bit of a risk. And the first couple of years, the kind of communication parts of the defense was just bad. They were just never on the right page. Finally, by the end of 2020, things started to kind of click, and we saw improvement 2020, 2021, and really into 2022. There were just a couple of meltdown games where it went poorly. But overall, I thought Golding was a good defensive coordinator. I thought he was an elite schemer, had a great scheme, and like formationally, all of that was great. I thought his kind of the players improving under him was not as good. We just saw guys would kind of flatline after their first year or so and didn't continue to improve. So I think it was time. It was time to move on, get back to a different kind of attitude. And that's where Kevin Steele comes in. So Kevin Steele has been with the program before a couple of times. He's been basically everywhere in college football, Auburn, Clemson, wherever else. He's just
Think he was
one
the
of those.
Baylor head coach at one point.
He's just been around. And Steele brings a much more, he's flexible schematically. He's run different things just about everywhere he's gone. But the one constant is the secondary is always going to be towing the line on pass interference on every single play, and they're going to be jumping passes, and that's exciting. One of our big complaints under Pete Golding was just kind of a lack of aggression from Alabama's defense. It was very much more of the limit damage style of defense, and we kind of missed. Let's make some plays. So that's kind of been the theme. Again, we'll see if the results match the talk. Are they actually going to be that aggressive going forward? What does that bring? But that's the hope. Kevin Steele brings back a little more of that old school aggression that we didn't have.
It's interesting you talk about the pass interference. There's some Texas fans who didn't necessarily love all the even last year some of the uncalled defensive plays. But I mean that's SEC football is what I responded to people who said that. But I did find an interesting stat to we talked about a little bit on our podcast, but I'll share it with you. I think Alabama, is going to play aggressive on both sides of the ball. It sounds like even more aggressive on defense. But last year they were, I believe, at home 6 penalties for 54 yards. And there's really that skewed by that Auburn game with 11 for 102. And then on the road averaged over 10 for 85 yards. Obviously 15 against Texas, 17 against Tennessee. Very outliers for Nick Saban, I think, in the whole. But if you're going to be even more aggressive on defense, it could be interesting on we've always said OU also coached against Texas receivers often. It's just they can't call it every play, hold them every play. If you get three or four, but you prevent a touchdown, it's worth it, right? It's like the soccer, the smart foul when someone's breaking away, take the yellow card. It's worth it to save a goal, right? So it'll be interesting to see. But secondary to me, the whole battle in this game, right? It will come down to Texas offense needs to carry them against Alabama's defense. It will be Texas's playmakers at receiver versus the incredible secondary for Alabama, as well as the pass rush against Texas's line. Can they hold up against the pass rush? So let's start kind of in the passing side of the ball with the secondary. Obviously, Kool-Aid starts it off, but Malachi Moore, incredible, talent freshman, Caleb Downs. Who are the players, the names Texas fans should know in the secondary?
Yeah, Kool-Aid. Watch that guy. He was great as a sophomore, kind of broke into the scene last year. I think he will be pushing to be the best corner in the country this year. Kool-Aid is just awesome. Good speed, good instincts, good size. Just can't say much bad about him. He's just a great player.
Yeah.
On the other side, Terrion Arnold was kind of in and out last year. He's a converted safety basketball player, still trying to figure out corner. Very good athlete. Everything I've heard sounds like he's kind of taken a step forward, kind of figured out the positions, becoming comfortable, and is going to blend that athleticism. So those two guys should lock down the outside corners. At safety, Caleb Downs. Oh man, this guy, true freshman, probably should have been a number one overall recruit, except they don't give that to safeties. But Caleb Downs, from what I've heard from people that have been kind of at the scrimmages, he is the best player on this team.
Wow.
He is that guy. He's already locked down the starting job, is going to be a safety. He's just got it. 6 foot, 205, fast, strong, would be probably a starter at receiver, running back if he wanted. Just one of those guys. So watch for Caleb Downs. He's going to be a superstar the next couple of years and be in the NFL before we know it. Past that, it gets a little more interesting. So there's another safety spot that's open. Christian Story is a fourth-year guy, former quarterback from a small school that we kind of thought was going to be the guy. Recently, it sounds like Jalen Key, a transfer out of UAB, is going to lock it down. Kind of a 6'2", 210 graduate senior. Sounds like he's doing really well. We'll see how that goes. And then there's the nickel corner, or the star. Malachi Moore is the fifth year guy, or I think he may still be fourth year. He was freshman All-American a couple of years ago, ended up getting benched for Brian Branch multiple times over the last couple of years. He's a veteran, good instincts with the ball in the air. He's kind of undersized, gets pushed around at the run game. So don't be surprised if he ends up the sixth guy, which is kind of crazy for a former freshman All-American, but I think he's more like the sixth. Earl Little is the redshirt freshman that we're all kind of hoping takes the step to push him out. He's shown up a bunch as kind of an NFL legacy guy, played under Pat Surtain in high school. He's got a lot of talent. Regardless, this is the best position group on Alabama's roster, just in general. There's depth, there's top-end talent. They're going to be good. It is a phenomenal secondary.
Call it right here on our show. They only gave up 12 passing touchdowns last year, which is incredible. That's less than one per game. Less, can they possibly make that less this year? That seems undoable.
Well, half of those were against Tennessee.
Yeah, right. Hendon Hooker.
And that was all Jalin Hyatt going deep. Oh, it gives me nightmares, man. Overall, they'll probably give up a couple more touchdowns just by
Sure.
nature of stats. It'll go up a little bit, but overall, it will be a better group. The safeties
Yeah.
are faster. The corners are the same and more experienced.
There's two guys on that team that I'm just, as a former, guy who played secondary, I'm excited to watch and excited for them to hurry up and go to the NFL so I can watch them, without fear. But Kool-Aid and Caleb Downs, both just, first round NFL guys. But the pass rush, speaking of first round NFL guys, right? You said at the beginning, maybe the best defensive player in Alabama program history. Just, I mean, an unbelievable player who Texas fans saw firsthand, Will Anderson. Saw him in all the games when Texas coming in. He was the focal point of trying to stop him from the offense, and really is the reason, probably, that one of the reasons that Kelvin Banks was a freshman All-American. I mean, just FYI, Kelvin Banks ended up blocking four players last year who were drafted in the first round, and they get zero sacks and I think like three pressures. So he really is that dude at left tackle. But Turner is returning. Dallas Turner, folks remember him. I believe he's the guy who actually hit Ewers and knocked him out of the game. But Chris Braswell has to replace the Will Anderson kind of boots, which, you know, at Jack, which is impossible to do. But those two guys bringing pressure, probably Deontay Lawson and Tresman Marshall in the linebacker room, kind of filling out the four there. But I mean, what from a defensive line or kind of edge pass rush should we be looking for this year?
Yeah, Dallas Turner had a great freshman season. He kind of underwhelmed last year in the follow-up. We'll see. He's a former five-star guy. Now he's stepping into the kind of veteran leader of the group. We'll see how it goes. He's got very, very good athleticism and length and can really, really pull off some cool pass rushing moves here and there. Just the consistency in his game hasn't been there. He can get washed at times for entire halves. So we'll see how it goes. He's got a lot of talent. Chris Braswell, again, a former five-star guy. He's more, not quite as long and bendy as Dallas Turner. He's more of a power rusher kind of guy. There's a lot of talk about him coming into last season. Was kind of a third rusher. It didn't really materialize like we had hoped. Now it's okay. We'll see. He's got the former five-star talent. Just hasn't put it on the field yet. Now that said, there are, I think, four more edge rushers that were all five-star players in the last two classes. It is nuts.
Ridiculous.
So you've got Jeremiah Alexander, just a big hulking guy out of Birmingham, Alabama, in his second year. You got Quay Rousseau and the kind of top five recruit Keon Keeley coming in. And one more. Who's the other? Oh, Yanze Pierre, also a true freshman. Basically three true freshmen, five stars.
Jeez.
Pierre and Keeley both came in late this summer. They weren't early enrollees. So we haven't seen anything of them yet, but they're there. They're in the wings. So if Dallas Turner or Turner play, he's a veteran. But if Chris Braswell isn't it, there's guys waiting. So it could be interesting. All that said, though, I mean, you don't replace Will Anderson. What you guys saw against Texas last year was the worst game of his career.
Yeah.
And he was still pretty good.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So you just don't replace it. There's a lot of talent but a lot of unknown with this group as well.
So for the rest of the defense, kind of finish it off. Any names beyond that we need to know? Obviously a couple bigs up front. Anyone who, because again, like I said, the trenches in this one, giving Ewers enough time to make his reads to hopefully let Sark scheme some things up against that incredible secondary. You're not going to throw for 300 yards against an Alabama secondary. You're just not going to do it. But, you know, there's going to have to be some plays. Is there anyone else on this defense that Texas fans should know or names just to keep in their back of their mind?
Yeah, so the defensive line has been kind of underwhelming the last couple of years. They're okay, but just no real stars to show up in there. This year you've got nose tackle Jaheim Otis.
Big guy.
Was about 380 pounds as a freshman a year ago. immediately something clicked for him. He slimmed down, played at about, I think, 340 last year and got on the field as a true freshman. Played well, made some pretty good splash plays. He's now down to around 325.
Wow.
Moat seems to be kind of the center focal point to the whole group. And he's one of those guys like, hey, former 400-pound guy that is slippery. He is slick. There's a lot of hope that Jaheim Otis turns into a second-year star player along the defensive line. Has he proved that yet? No. And neither have any of the other defensive linemen. There's a couple of seniors and Tim Smith and Justin Aboigbe that have started a lot of games and made not many plays in that many starts, but they exist. They're there. There's a lot of depth. We just somebody's got to step up and be more the depth, and that's kind of what we're waiting for.
So let's close out all this serious talk. That was great, but let's take it to the part of the show that the listeners come in for. A little hurry up offense, we're calling it this year. So let's start quickly, without thinking too deeply on it. Wins total prediction for Alabama this year, what you got?
11 wins in the season, regular season, SEC championship, probably a first round playoff win, and I won't predict further than that.
That's fair. That's fair. So what we're hearing is a Texas Alabama rematch in the playoffs. I'm kidding. We'll keep it moving. Nick Saban, the man already has a statue, but when they inevitably make the film about his rise from the West Virginia coal mines to the career that he's had, who plays Nick Saban in a biopic?
Tom Cruise, let's go for it.
Ooh, I like it. I
They're about
like
the
it.
same
I
size.
was gonna say neither, yeah, vertically imposing, but incredible forces of nature. All right, I like this one a lot. This question: who is your least favorite coach in the Nick Saban era?
Ooh, least favorite coach.
You mentioned a couple who didn't do their job. I don't know if there's.
I think Bill O'Brien's got to be pretty high up there.
So how mad are you going to be when Bill O'Brien leads Mac Jones Renaissance and leads the Patriots to the playoffs or something on the back of his offense?
I mean, he, as bad as Bill O'Brien was, he's an improvement over trying to make Matt Patricia an offensive guy.
That was weird. That
I
was
don't
weird.
know what Bill Belichick's doing, but then I don't know. Did you see they just got 79 total yards in their last preseason game?
Yeah,
79 yards.
I think you're right that O'Brien is an upgrade, but man, I don't know that he's in a position to succeed there. It will be interesting. There's a couple Texas guys, but they're all on the defensive side of the ball, Adrian Phillips and Schooler. So it's no Texas fans are watching that, rooting for the offense, and Bill O'Brien will have to do it without that love from Texas fans. Enough Bill O'Brien talk. He's already filled enough airspace. This one might be controversial if any of your Alabama fan listeners are here following you onto this podcast. Best Tuscaloosa barbecue.
Let's see. I always like Nick's and the Sticks. Dreamland's overrated.
Ooh, there it is.
I mean, sure, they have pretty good ribs, but like you just want a piece of white bread with that. And that's all you get. Like, okay. Full Moon's pretty good. Overall, I don't love Tuscaloosa's barbecue options.
There it is.
That'd probably get me thrown out. But
That's
I,
right.
the,
Formerly of Roll Tide Roll, now unemployed, bro. No, I'm kidding.
the years I was there, I never really found a barbecue place that I really said, yeah, this is my spot.
Well,
I've seen a lot better.
my follow-up question is white Alabama white barbecue sauce over, under, or adequately rated?
I think it's underrated overall. It's got a place. There's a time and a place for each different type of barbecue sauce. Personally, I love Carolina barbecue. Give me some good mustard vinegar flavor to it. The Alabama white sauce, very good on more chicken type meals. It's kind of got that horseradish base to it. I like it a lot. It's very good.
I've only had it once, and I didn't dislike it at all. It was different, but I liked it.
Then you've got your more sweet, syrupy, Texas style, Memphis, Texas. What's the Kansas
Kansas
City, I
City.
think.
Yeah, that's a little
That those
thicker up
three,
there, but yeah.
yeah, those three tastes about the same to me. It's just tomato barbecue with a lot of sugar.
Sure. All right, so let's get out on this one, and maybe I'll make it a two-parter, but there's going to be a lot of Longhorns making the trip from Austin to Tuscaloosa. Give them the Reader's Digest, the tour guide version. What should they see? What should they skip? What's the things to do while they're there for the weekend?
Get breakfast. So you've got two, really three really good options that are going to be really tough to get into. You've got City Cafe in Northport. You've got the Waysider, and you've got Ramajamas right by the stadium. Breakfast wise, all three of those are wonderful. Just good luck getting a seat. Get there early. Let's see. I love for lunch, hooligans. It is one of my favorites. It's a Greek, kind of a Greek food, almost hybrid fast food.
Okay.
And their Greek is great, but they also do hamburgers. And it is one of the best hamburgers I've ever had.
I like it.
And you'd never expect it. It's just this random little Greek place.
I love that.
And then you'll want to spend some time on the strip, see downtown Tuscaloosa, see if you can work your way through all the drunk Alabama students. Just see what that's all about. It's I go kind of crazy. It's fun. There's a Waffle House. You get a win late at night, the Waffle House just goes nuts. So yeah, that's where I'd go.
That's tremendous. That's tremendous. So we have breakfast wrecks, we have late night wrecks, we have the whole gambit there. Appreciate it. One thing I didn't hear you mention, so my follow-up, is there a better game day drink than a Yellow Hammer?
I don't know. There's so much coconut and sweet. I'm not a sugar fan.
Okay.
So
Fair enough.
I know why people like them, but that's too much sugar for me.
All right, so for Texas fans, if you don't want a Rammer Jammer or a Yellow Hammer, just skip it according to Brent here. But it is a tradition, as I understand it, for the Alabama pregame. That's tremendous, Brent. You gave us the football, you gave us the insight, you gave us the barbecue takes. You can't ask for much more than that, Brent. If people want to find all of this goodness that you have, all these takes, if they want to find more of it, where can they follow you? Where can they find your work?
Follow us at Roll Bama Roll. Me and a few of other of our editors kind of share the Twitter account. That's where most of our best hot takes go. I save them when I have the few hot takes I have for that account. You can follow me at BTBama22. I bet you can't guess that initials and combination there. Again, I'm there. I'll post here and there. But for the most part, yeah, follow us at Roll Bama Roll. That's where you'll find the best takes.
Fantastic. So good friend as always. I've made friends with Alabama when I was there for last year's game. Some nice fans who, in a tough loss were good. I even in the national championship game had some people come up and console me a bit. It would have been a different game if Colt didn't get hurt, they said, which felt really good in the moment. But I've never had too much issue with Bama fans, once in California, once in Austin, but in Tuscaloosa, let's see how it goes. But Brent, thanks for bridging the gap and bringing the friendly podcast onto here. We'll have to have you on again soon when we're SEC brethren.
Yeah, absolutely. I enjoyed it.
All right. Thanks as always. And folks, we have finally made it. Doing our season previews in reverse, we've made it to our final preview of the season, the Rice Owls. We've made it through week zero. We are in the throes of week one. This is officially college football season is back. Time. We could count down the number of days. This will hit your podcast feeds on Tuesday. So it's 4 days. 4 days from when you listen to this to when you see actual football with the Rice Owls making the commute along I-10 to DKR. And we are thrilled to be joined with our friend Matthew Bartlett from the Roost today. Matthew, how's it going?
It's good, man. Like you mentioned, it's one of those things that just boom, it sneaks up on you in here, and it's football time all of a sudden.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. It's football time. Look, we know this one is Texas and Rice is are coming into the season in slightly different trajectories. But Rice got its first bowl game since 2014 last season, right? Doesn't matter how they got there. They got to a bowl, much like my Chipotle order. Rice is best enjoyed in a bowl versus a tortilla. So I'm excited. I was good friends with Coach Bailiff. Who a few years ago got you to the first bowl in quite a long time, but I root for Rice. Like I live in Houston, I want Rice to be good. Obviously not when they play Texas, but otherwise it's all good. But Mike Boomgren in his 5th year got to the bowl. You're now heading for a Conference USA to a revamp from Conference USA, excuse me, to a revamp American Athletic Conference. What are the vibes right now in Westview? What are the Rice faithful feeling?
I think it's a mix of a couple things, right? Because obviously, in the world of college football realignment, you're either moving up or you're getting left behind. So if you're moving up, everybody's happy. Like Rice is the invitation to the American, the additional exposure, heck, being able to play on ESPN and Fox instead of BN Sports and Facebook, knowing where your game is going to be on TV, like it's the little things like that that are making everybody happy. So we're all excited on that front. And then there's kind of this mixed anticipation with this coming football season, because, you know, this is Mike Bloomgren, been around for a while, made the bowl game last year, which going into the season, the marching orders were go to a bowl game. But when you get there at 5-7 and you get in because of grades, like it's fitting for Rice, right? that you make a bowl game because of grades. But also it kind of felt to some degree like this team was getting in on a technicality and didn't really reach its full potential. But yeah, it was a bowl team, but like it could have been better. And I think that's kind of what when we get to this year, first year in the new conference, there's this kind of not yet there, but can it be anticipation where Rice fans really think you got the shiny new quarterback, you got JT Daniels, you got so many different pieces on offense, some playmakers on defense. Can this be the year where everything comes together? And then you, bam, you open up on the 40 acres in Austin and you're going to find out real quick.
And a good Texas, right? It's, you know, some years we don't know exactly what to expect when we play Rice in that first game, but it feels like this Texas team is probably in the right space. But I do need to go back and pause you. Did you say played on Facebook?
Yes. Oh yeah.
Like
I'm trying to remember.
Streamed on Facebook.com.
Yes. I don't remember who I think it was. Might have been produced by like Stadium, but streamed through Facebook. Yeah. Oh yeah, no. Conference USA we were playing on Facebook.
That's wild.
And yeah.
So all the Big 12
was not the worst, because sure, you can get on Facebook and you could see it. You could also see grandma's comments right next to your game. But
look, Gerald,
it's not happening anymore.
We've often done our live stream immediate reaction to games on Facebook, so we will not besmirch the Facebook content. I've just never consumed the game via that. I love it. So all the Big 12 fans who complain about the Longhorn Network, don't you take that all back. No, you mentioned it. And I think, you know, one of the most interesting parts of this game is Rice quarterback by way of USC, come Georgia, come West Virginia, JT Daniels will be playing Texas for the third time in his career. USC is a freshman in a great battle with, I believe, freshman Sam Ehlinger at the same time. And then last year with West Virginia. This time it's under the tutelage of a name that, you know, college football fans will certainly remember, third-year offensive coordinator Marcus Tuiasosopo, a player who I loved on the old NCAA video games. What is the expectation? It must be pretty high for JT Daniels with his pedigree coming in for that Rice team that already was, you know, took a pretty big step up last year in passing. I believe 65th in the nation in passing, you know, really moving up. So what's the expectation there?
Well, I think it's interesting because if you look back at Rice, you know, in the Mike Bloomgren era, and even before, Rice has started more quarterbacks than any other FBS institution since 2017.
Wow.
They're averaging 2.5 quarterbacks a year to start. And some of that is you had to make a change because one guy wasn't performing it. A lot of it is injuries. I mean, you have a guy you like and he gets hurt. And so it's really, really hard to evaluate an offense if you're playing Russian roulette at quarterback. And that's honestly what it's felt like around South Main the past couple of years. So you bring in a guy in JT Daniels who you look back his time at USC, his time at Georgia, left those two stops primarily because of injury, ended up getting Wally Pipped and replaced, and someone went on, goes on to West Virginia and had production and has played in this system before. You get a guy who understands, who knows what he's doing. And by golly, if you can keep him healthy, because Rice runs a pro-style complex offense, that's kind of difficult to throw in your third-string quarterback on Tuesday and say, hey, go play Texas. Like, that's hard for anybody, but especially on short notice, and that's what Rice has been doing. So, yeah, with Tui at the helm and Mike Bloomgren, the offense that they kind of put together, just seeing him operate it in camp and then the spring, he looks so comfortable. He makes the joke himself, like a 14-year college quarter. He looks like you should playing in this system. So I think that's what is most exciting, because you finally married a complex scheme that if executed well, is proven to work at the highest levels. We just haven't really gotten that yet.
If Bishop Sycamore taught us anything, it's that if the quarterback is 5 years older than the players he's playing, he can do very well. So there is, you know, a ton of optimism on the offense and on the throwing, you know, side of the ball with JT Daniels. Excuse me, but you do have to replace 6'5" wide receiver Bradley Rosner, who makes his way to, I believe, NC State, averaged like 20 yards a catch. But Luke McCaffrey, a guy who came in, you know, obviously people know his dad, know his last name, came in as one of those many quarterbacks, but really made his mark last year as a real deal wide receiver. What's the pass catcher room look like with McCaffrey and everyone else who JT will be throwing the ball to?
Luke is special, man. And it's one of those things, it's just like you kind of go through the list of the big time playmakers, and Bradley Rosner obviously not there anymore. But what's really interesting with Luke McCaffrey, like you see his brother on Sundays, you saw his dad in the NFL, he has that pedigree. So obviously there's that anticipation of like, you're a McCaffrey, you're going to be good. And then he comes in, he plays receiver last year. And, you know, I would joke with him, this is the first time he's ever played wide receiver, like beyond like catching the ball in the backyard with his brothers and kind of like he knew the quarterback aspect of it, but being where you need to go and those kind of aspects, he was still like refining his technique and really learning how to play the position last year. And, you know, through spring and through fall camp, you now have a second year receiver who has the athleticism of the family bloodline. And you can tell when he's on the field. I remember getting so excited as a quarterback. I watched him at Nebraska make a wrong read and go right into the belly of a 5-star defensive end when he was playing quarterback in Nebraska, made a miss, popped outside and ran away. And I was like, you just can't teach that. And so that's what's exciting with him getting the football. There aren't many athleticism matchups where Rice and Texas are going to be able to go toe to toe. Luke McCaffrey can. Like, put him and Jalen Catalon on the same field together, and it's going to be fun, man. That's going to be a battle. But the rest of the receiving room is interesting because you got Matt Sykes, transfer coming in from UCLA, played a little bit over there, has been getting his feet wet, learning the offense, has had some splash moments, hasn't really settled in yet, but he's a guy that they're going to lean on a lot because they need guys who've proven on the field before, and he's one of them. And then the other interesting X factor is a guy named Landon Ransom, who just turned 18 this past week. It was an early enrollee, one of the first ever early enrollees as a high school, or I guess a true freshman. His would have been his last semester of high school. Came in early, got spring ball, which is kind of typical at the Texas level, maybe the P5 level. It doesn't happen at Rice. This is the first. So getting him in and getting him early, he looks like he's not 18 anymore. He looks fantastic. The game is not too big for him. All of those, you know, colloquialisms. And then in the backfield, got a 1-2 punch of Dean Connors and Juma Taviano. So there's a bunch of guys in there. You get that top five that look to be quality guys. And then they have a bunch of different guys who have sparked at moments here and there. And you probably won't see play, you know, 30 snaps on Saturday, but you will see here and there in very specific roles for a couple packages here and there.
So you mentioned some of the backfield. Juma obviously averaged, I think, close to 6 yards a pop. Is Ari Broussard back? I think he had 9 touchdowns.
Ari Broussard, at one point, I think week 4 or 5 last season, he was leading the nation in touchdowns.
Yeah.
He had like 10 touchdowns in 5 games or something like that. So he will be the short yardage and goal line guy. He will pound it in. If you get within 2 yards of the goal line, he will score.
So Juma, Ari, any other names to know there in the backfield just for Texas fans to be ready?
Dean Connors is probably one. And, he's the white guy playing running back, which that's, you know, rare enough these days. Sure. And what's interesting at him, he kind of came in from JUCO and through 2020, he actually played basically 3 seasons of football in a calendar year. Between transfers and JUCO and going in and falling everything, all the schedules getting rearranged. So he came in last year and the Rice staff was like, we really want to use you, but like, we don't want you broken because you played so much in such a short time. So he kind of got eased in, was a third down guy last year, and has kind of been right in there. Fantastic pass catcher, kind of a slasher, quick, can get in, but runs with an edge and a little bit of power too. So you'll see both of them out of the backfield running and as well as catching passes.
So switching it over to the defensive side of the ball, this will be the interesting matchup with, you know, Texas with the potential of a very dynamic offense. And Rice brings back a really strong linebacking core to run Ryan Smith's 3-4 and a solid secondary. But last year struggled to stop the run. We're not going to bring up Frank Gore Jr. There's no reason to do that in that ball game. But, you know, Bijan is gone. Roshan is gone for Texas. They're going to be blooding out some new running backs. But so it may end up being a strength on strength if Texas looks to throw the ball against Rice, who has a pretty good secondary. So what sum up the, I guess, the Rice defense strengths, weaknesses this year, what they've changed from last year and what Texas fans should be looking for.
You know, part of the biggest concern, you mentioned the run defense last year, and that was a sticking point. Part of kind of the reason behind, I believe, the past 2 years, really, Rice has slept on that, that aspect is they brought in DeBraylon Carroll from Duncanville. Who was MVP of his district as a nose tackle, which is hard to do his senior year. And we're talking big 6A football in Texas, not some, you know, tiny town. So it came in 2020, Rice had a top 15 defense in the nation with him right in the middle. Misses the entire 2020 season with an Achilles tear, rehabs, gets back for 2021, almost at 100%, high ankle sprain, and is kind of limited and kind of not as effective as he could have been for all last season. He is healthy now. And man, when you watch the D-line and practice with him in the middle, sometimes having that big run stuff from the middle, it's that simple. So I can't promise it's going to be night and day better, but they feel a lot better.
Okay.
With him in the middle. So that's a big one. You got Isaiah Floyd and Blake Blanish. So three kind of big bodies inside of the middle. That's still, you got to show me. First, I kind of see the pieces of how it could be better, but I got to see it. And then, yeah, it's going to be interesting seeing how kind of how the rest of the unit moves around behind them. You got on the outside, you got Coleman Coco, who's a transfer, right, who has come in and really flashed, really made a lot of plays and kind of solidified a unit that did lose a bunch of veteran guys.
Tremendous name. As well, Coleman Coco. And when you have to replace a name like Jaeger Bull, I don't remember when he was last there, but you know, that's tough. And Coleman Coco comes in and does a pretty good job. Just the name. I mean, from a name perspective.
I get it in my head. Is it Coleman Coco or Coco Coleman? At first, last, you get, I got to do some thinking. This Fair is, enough. You know, this is the Rice people is what they're doing to me.
So sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there. You were naming off some other names.
Yeah. Well, the last guy I was going to bring up is probably Josh Piercy. And, you know, he kind of is the rush end position of he'll have his hand in the dirt sometimes he won't, kind of moves around, does a couple different things. But Rice has been searching for a guy that can just get into the backfield and make plays. And he became that guy last year, kind of rose up and took the mantle. And so, you know, with Texas moving some guys around on the offensive line, he's the kind of guy, if there's anybody that's going to be able to get through and wreak havoc, he's a guy that I know the Texas offensive coordinator and staff will have circled.
He looks, I mean, just looking at him, I saw pictures of him.
He looks like a great guy.
Yeah. He just looks like a dude who's going to give your offense trouble. Like, he's that long, strong, quick, rangy edge rusher. Like, he looks every bit the part. So he was a guy I had circled there as well. Just to kind of put a point on it, right? Eighth worst against the run last year, and you mentioned where that may improve, but 38th against the pass. So again, like I said, it was a good pass defense. And an interesting player, because you have McCaffrey's younger brother, I believe, in the secondary, Gabe Taylor, a hard-hitting safety, is also Sean Taylor's younger brother, right?
Yep, he's in there. And he's an interesting story because Luke McCaffrey grew up, you know, wanted to play quarterback in Nebraska, ended up quarterback at Rice before transferring to wide receiver. Gabe, after everything going on with his brother, decided he wanted to kind of do his own thing and went to play basketball. And so going into his junior year of high school is playing basketball and getting recruited to play basketball. His senior year, he says, nah, I'm going to give a football a try. And so comes in, and because of that, he kind of flies under the radar and ends up signing with Rice right at the end. He's one of a very under-recruited guy, and then comes out and lo and behold, he's a superstar because that bloodline and his talent and his work ethic. So very, very impactful player, and excited to have him back. He's been around for a while. He came in the COVID year, 2020. All these guys have now been around for several years now. You lose track of it.
For sure. All right. Well, let's, speaking of track, let's speed it up a little bit here, right? This is perfect. I love the serious stuff. But our people really come for the section we're calling this year, hurry up offense. And we've had, I think, a different name for it for 7 years straight, but this is the name. This is the one, hurry up offense. It makes the most sense. So without too much thought, without too much explanation, you can explain as much as you want, but we'll go quickly with some rapid fire questions. We'll start it right off the bat. Wins prediction for the Rice Owls for next year.
It's going to be interesting. I think you have a easier schedule off top after Texas, and then you got tough at the end. So I think at six is the floor. I would love to see seven or eight.
You heard it here first. Rice going back to a bowl, baby. They're not waiting. They're going right back. I love it. Even more interesting prediction. Band prediction for Texas. What do you think they're gonna hit us with?
You know, if the mob were disclosing their secrets, they wouldn't be telling it to me. But I have no doubt that it'll be entertaining as it always is.
That's fair. We just did the Alabama. So we went in reverse order. That is our week two opponent. We did the Alabama preview in the same way that Nick Saban is ironclad with his game plan, gives nothing away. The mob keeps their game plan close to the chest. I appreciate it. Keeping it, I guess, Alabama, since that is Texas's week two opponent. Texas and Rice are two of, I think, eight, maybe nine teams that have a winning record all time against Alabama. Rice 3-0, perfect against Alabama Crimson Tide.
So undefeated.
Since we have to play them, and Rice is obviously the experts, what advice do you have for Texas? How do you beat Alabama so easily?
Don't do what Texas did in the fourth quarter last time.
It hurts, but you're right. It hurts.
I don't know, man. It's interesting enough because Texas is the ultimate. Like, you have everything that you could ever want for and more, and everything's lined up. You just, at the end of the day, you got to go out and execute. So I don't know if Texas has the roster that they think they do, and this is a, you know, this is air quotes, right, a down year for Alabama. You know, sooner or later, that push has to come to shove, right?
Let's hope so. I believe Texas is 7-0 all time against Alabama when their quarterback doesn't get hurt. 0-2 the last two times when they knock out our
there's always a burnt orange way to slice things. Is that the quarterback injuries?
That's right. All right. So just answer it for us. The folks are all begging to know, why does Rice play Texas?
That big dog, because it is easy, but because it is hard. But I don't know. There's a speech.
It's beautiful.
They're on the schedule. Texas is writing a big check.
No, look, we've long advocated, Gerald and my co-host Gerald and I, that Texas doesn't really play ever, has never played FCS teams. And you still want a game to tune up a little bit. And I always advocate for playing other teams in the state, because if you're paying a team, whether it's, you know, whether it's Rice or North Texas or whoever, to kind of in the start UTEP, keep that money in Texas, right? It's in the ecosystem. I appreciate that. And hopefully it makes all of Texas college football the better for it. But let's keep it, because I'm hungry. I've been recording for a while tonight. What is your favorite Rice dish? Rice-based dish.
I should have a better answer for this.
You've never been asked.
Options. You know, not it, you can go one or two ways. If just give me some fried rice,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, absolutely. With all like combo with absolutely. All the different meats and everything, that's good. But if I want to cheat a little bit, I'm not usually a rice with my Tex-Mex fan, but maybe some dirty brown rice on a burrito or something like that. I could go either way.
I like that. Okay, so we can give fried rice or a little Spanish rice, Mexican rice there. I like it. I like where your head's at. So rice is basically Hogwarts. We all know that. Which Harry Potter, not which rice school, you can tell us that if you want, but which Harry Potter school would you be? Or college?
College, is Hufflepuff the smart ones?
I believe it's Gryffindor, Hufflepuff, Ravenclaw.
Ravenclaw is the smart ones.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll go Ravenclaw. There you go.
Fair enough.
Got to bone up. I feel like that's the only answer that I got to stay on brand.
Yeah, I mean, it works, right? It's we just assume, you know, Texas fans watched the movie, Rice fans read the book. Dream?
I did, but it was a long time ago, man.
No, it's all good. We've all got a couple grays since then, for sure. Dream NIL pairing. In the age of NIL, we have players like DeColdis Crawford being NIL for air conditioned companies. If you had to pick someone off the current Rice Owls roster, what would be the dream NIL pairing player, and what business, if it could be any business in the world, would it be?
Now I'm kind of thinking through the roster. I got
it's a deep one. It's a deep one.
There should be some good ones. We have, I feel like DJ Arkansas is a linebacker for Rice, who picked Rice over Arkansas. So you got that going for you already.
Nice.
But also, like, there should be some sort, he should be the spokesperson for some sort of events entertainment company in Arkansas. Just,
I like that. I like that a
DJ
lot.
DJ Arkansas, here pumping your Arkansas DJs.
What was the, I don't know if you're a Parks and Rec fan, what was the entertainment company they had? Entertainment 720 or something like that?
720.
Yeah. Okay, so I thought maybe you might go with one of my favorite, sneaky favorite names in the entire college football landscape this year. I already told you Coleman Coco, who transferred from Colgate, but Mo Billity.
Billity.
Are you kidding me? How is this a real name?
Here's the deep take on Mo Billity. Okay, committed to Rice as a walk-on. And ended up getting a scholarship offer to North Texas. So went to North Texas, entered the transfer portal, boom, back at Rice.
Wow.
So we got mobility. So we were stumping and excited for months that we were going to talk about mobility. And then he left us, but now he's back.
Ah, twice fried rice. I love it. Mobility. I think maybe the scooter store or something like that is just built in. You want mobility.
Oh,
you know,
that's embedded within every college campus at this point, right? The influx of scooters hanging around every entrance.
Absolutely. Feel free to pitch that to the Rice administrators. I know.
Yeah,
you know,
I'll work on it. These are all good ideas.
Yeah, you know the higher ups. All right, let's leave it the last one. This is one we like to play, and I usually just pick random alumni. It felt so disrespectful with Rice because you have such distinguished alumni. But we play, because we're a PG podcast, we call it Bedwet or Dead, but you may remember it by a different name when you were in elementary school. Marry, have relations, or murder. So Bedwet or Dead, Howard Hughes, Dr. Joy, or Lance Berkman?
Oh, man. Howard Hughes, Dr. Joy?
Do you remember Dr. Lance Joy, the call-in therapist?
Okay, there we go. I'm trying to place. Oh.
If it's easier, I do have an alternate. I wondered if everyone would know who Dr. Joy was. I have an alternate. If you want to sub out, you can.
Well, I want to know the alternate just because.
The alternate is Tim League, founder of Alamo Draft House, Rice grad and longtime Austin resident who came to speak one time at the fraternity house I live in. Shout out to the Taos Club Coffees and Tim League, our guest speaker in 2000.
Okay. We got to marry him because Alamo Draft House, there's only one in Houston, the Houston area.
Yeah.
Thankfully, it's not terribly far from my house. Mm. And I have made him a lot of money. So thank you for your establishment. Lance Berkman is the hot name around Nice. So around Rice for one reason or another, there'll be controversy or not, him being hired as a baseball coach or not. So we'll bet him. And then who are we killing?
Howard Hughes.
Howard Hughes. There you go.
All right. He would probably want
that. About right.
Depending on what part of his life.
There'd be some good school alumni. Rice is a pretty good one, but you could get some others.
Who did I miss? Who's your favorite Rice alum?
Ooh, I don't know. I'm kind of biased. I've gotten to talk with a lot of them. Awesome. Anthony Rendon is a really good guy.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That with him, Christian Covington, he's another good choice.
When he was on the Texans, my wife, I don't know, maybe was he on the Hard Knocks years? I don't know how. Somehow Christian.
I think
Covington,
he was.
I think Christian Covington became her favorite player on the Texans. So that's a good answer. She seemed lovable, I think she said. So there you go.
He's a great. We've gone on and done pod. We did a podcast with Christian Covington, 2 or 3 years ago, where we ranked. We did a draft of every Marvel movie at the time. I think there were like 30 at the time because he's a huge comic book Marvel guy.
Of course,
and,
he is.
We just
that.
Draft. We came on. We talked zero football, and we drafted Marvel movies.
I love it. That is exactly our brand. Gerald used to have another podcast called Two Woke Nerds where he discussed such things. We have a segment on our Thursday show called Godzillatron where Gerald brings comic books and other, you know, nerd sci-fi that he's watching. We try to talk as little actual sport. Now we cover the sports, but that's the stuff that's fun. I love that. I may have to search out and find the Christian Covington Marvel Draft podcast. So I will say this, if any of our fans want to search out and find the good content that you were creating on your site or on social media, where will the folks find you?
We're at the Roost on, is it still Twitter? Whatever, you know what it is. Sure. Whatever that website is, it's Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all that good stuff. Got a podcast, Dave Campbell's Republic of Football Podcast Network with those guys. Every podcast under the state is represented, every school, FBS school. So we got a lot going on there. We're plenty busy. It's football season. We got Rice, Texas preview content. We'll have game notes and recaps, and maybe something interesting happens. One note that I can pass on from my buddy Eric Henry at 247 that let me in on this earlier this evening. JT Daniels is making his third start at DKR. Quinn Ewers is making his fifth, so he's not too far behind the current starting Texas quarterback.
That's incredible. What a stat. That's why we bring the smart guys on here. That's a great stat. Thanks for sharing that.
I'm stealing, but I'm sharing my references, so that's got to count for something.
I love it. I love it. Well, thank you so much. We appreciate it. Hopefully, we'll have you on as this won't be the last time Rice plays Texas.
And that's it. One host, two guests, two previews, one heck of a pod. I know it's always made better by Gerald. Hopefully, he'll be able to join us for our next one. My name is Kyle Carpenter. It's been a pleasure. Follow me on the socials media at Kyle Carpenter. Also follow the Texas Pregamer at Texas Pregamer. Follow Gerald at GH Goodrich. Follow the show on Twitter at Longhorn Pod, Facebook and Instagram, the Longhorn Republic. Email us at longhornpod@gmail.com. Lord willing and the creek don't rise. We'll be back this week with our final season preview. Get ready for that, the good stuff. We'll have some post-Rice breakdown following this weekend as well. You can find that on our socials media and various websites. Thank you so much for tuning in again this week. And until next week, hook 'em.